The historic Christian principles of municipal rights have been eroded in recent years. For over 1,400 years, the Christian principles of municipal leaders being elected by landowners and ratepayers provided stability and economic progress which blessed and benefited all. The freest, most productive, prosperous, and generous nations in the history of the world grew out of these municipal rights. However, today, secular humanist globalists, with their agenda of centralization, have created uni-cities where ratepayers and landowners are swamped by squatters and transient migrant workers who loot the public treasury, who've hijacked whole municipalities, looted its resources, and turned communities which used to be safe and efficient into degenerate crime zones, with criminals running the entire structure from the chief of police in many cases and the commissioner all the way down. And we can see what goes on and the results of this uni-city chaos. In Proverbs we read, "I went by the field of the lazy man and by the vineyard of the man devoid of understanding." And there it was, all overgrown with thorns. Its surface was covered with nettles. Its stone wall was broken down. "When I saw it, I considered it well. I looked in it and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, so your poverty will come like a prowler and your need like an armed man." Proverbs 24. You can write that over most municipalities these days. If dirt and decay describe your municipality, then it's time to change the mayor and the town councillors. Crime and grime go together. Because of laziness, the building decays, and through the idleness of hands, the house leaks. That's a scriptural principle. "He who is slothful in his work is a brother to him who is a great destroyer." And this is what is going on in the society today. "Lest you learn his ways and set a snare for your soul, do not be one of those who shakes hands in a pledge, one of those who is a surety for debts." For communities to be strong, their families need to be strong. For city councils to be good, the citizens need to be good. Those who cannot control themselves are not capable of ruling over a city. Those who cannot manage their own households well are not qualified to lead others. A nation of sheep will breed a government of wolves. Just take the DANC. This city raked in billions and billions of rands more just in punitive water tariffs for the so-called drought, which we meant to have had 4 years ago, which ended about 3.5 years ago. We're still paying 800% water tariff for our water because of the drought, which ended years ago. And it never needed that. And we know that because they had to admit that they underspent $1.6 billion in the first year of this water tariff thing, which meant they overtaxed us. So why didn't we get a rebate? Why didn't they bring it down? And now our dams are overflowing and beyond overflowing. Do they bring the water price down? Not on your life. What Cruella de Vil, or should I say Patricia de Lille, brought in as mayor stays in. I mean, the DA says that this city works for you. No, it doesn't. This city steals from you. This city is corrupt and criminal. And the only way the DA-run city of Cape Town looks good is by comparing it to ANC-run cities, which is, you know, pretty pathetic. It's like you pointing to Judas and saying, "Well, you know, I'm better than him." But the standard is not Judas, the standard is Jesus. We're not meant to be lining ourselves up with, "Well, I'm better than this morally reprehensible reprobate over here." Honestly, to say that Cape Town's doing better than Johannesburg isn't saying anything at all. It's actually shocking. Those of us who've lived longer remember when Cape Town was litter-free, clean, pristine, and safe. Even in the townships, you could walk anywhere 2 in the morning and you were safe. This is not right. Nobody should think that what's going on now is normal or acceptable. Our Lord Jesus taught that whoever desires to be great amongst you, let him be your servant. Our Lord made clear that civil authorities are meant to be public servants. And he was the example. Our Lord could have been born in a temple. He could have been born in a palace. No, he is born in a carpenter's family. He worked with his hands. He was born actually in a stable. There wasn't even place for him in the inn. Today there's no place for him at the UN. But our Lord gave us the example of a hard-working, diligent leader. And that's the model that we should be following. It is for this reason that officials in civil government are called ministers. The word in Romans 13 is deacon. Same word that we use for deacon in the church. And so that's why you have a prime minister, a first servant in countries with the Westminster form of government. And that's why you take a man like Ian Smith in Rhodesia. I saw him when he was prime minister. I was 14 years old when I first saw the prime minister come to the Bulawayo Club. Battered out of Peugeot 404 came to stop. And I looked around and where's the police? No police inside. No bodyguard, no chauffeur, no driver, no aide-de-camp. Prime Minister on his own in the middle of war, driving himself, getting out. Well, that's how Ian Smith was. He would chase everyone away from Independence, which was the Prime Minister's residence in Rhodesia. There wouldn't be a cook in the kitchen or guard at the gate, just he and his wife off. And he said, I couldn't be bothered with all these people fussing around me. Very simple, straightforward, down-to-earth man, lived a very simple life, didn't get rich in it. And I might say that just as we are meant to have ministers of grace in the church, we're meant to have ministers of justice in the government. Both are meant to serve God and man and be under God. The concept that civil government is a servant of its citizens is a uniquely Christian concept. It's an idea that originated from these verses from our Lord Jesus in the Gospels. So the concept of a cabinet minister and a prime minister, I remember cabinet ministers, and I wrote to cabinet ministers, got replies from them, met them, and they would sign their letters, your humble servant. That was standard etiquette for a cabinet minister writing to a citizen of the country, your humble servant. Could you imagine a cabinet minister in this present government signing his letter, your humble servant? Well, if he did, he'd be a liar. When I was growing up, city councillors and members of parliament were not actually paid for their service. They only received basic expenses, travel expenses. They had to have real jobs to sustain themselves. For example, my history teacher, Mr. Rhys Davies, when I was studying in Milton High School, he's a member of the Rhodesian Parliament. And he wasn't absent from school often because Parliament only met a couple of weeks of the year. And when I said, so how can you be a member of Parliament and be our teacher? He said, we don't get paid to be members of Parliament. We have to have a real job as well. That's the way it used to be. And in Rhodesia, all these members of Parliament, town councillors, mayors, they didn't get paid for that. They donated their service to the community. They didn't expect to get rich through public service, like they do today. Even then, I remember Mr. Rhys Davies saying they received free train tickets from Bulawayo to Salisbury for parliamentary work, but if they wanted to fly, it was at their own expense. They didn't get free air tickets. At that time, the kind of people who offered themselves for public service as town councillors or members of parliament tended to have successful job providers in the community, able to donate their time to the city council or to legislative duties. How often do you see a head of state cycling to work? Well, we saw it in Rhodesia. Certainly, entering politics at that time was not a get-rich-quick scheme. Civil servants were sacrificing time and talent for the common good. So, for example, I remember in Rhodesia, at school, they'd say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it would be farmer, game ranger, soldier, farmer, maybe policeman, you know, game ranger, farmer. And nobody there was talking about, I want to be an astronaut or a politician or a professional athlete or an actor. But that's where the money is now. Now the money is be a politician or be an actor or, you know, pretend to be something you're not. And that's where all the money is. It's just bizarre how we've moved from the ideal being somebody who produces something useful and actually helps people to a bunch of parasites who want to loot from everyone. Today, unfortunately, it seems that in all too many ways, what was meant to be public service is now seen as an opportunity for self-serving criminals to loot public resources. And there's only one solution to this. You've got to chop away all the public benefits and salaries for these criminals in public service. The African Union reports that over 32% of the total gross domestic product, or GDP of Africa, is looted every year by government corruption. That's what the task force on corruption is. 32%. Now, this isn't talking about taxation. This isn't talking about inflation. This isn't talking about the non-government sector crime. It's just talking about the government crime and corruption. One-third of the total GDP of Africa stolen by governments. Government's not the solution. They're the problem. Can you imagine so-called civil servants are looting one-third of the GDP of Africa? That's 10 times more than all of foreign aid to Africa combined. And the foreign aid is obscene as well. When in the history of the world has there ever needed to be foreign aid? This is potentially the richest continent in the world in terms of minerals, in terms of agricultural potential, in terms of hydroelectric potential. Africa should be one of the richest continents in the world. And I still remember reading magazines from the 60s and 70s which were predicting that. Now, Africa still, 60 years after independence in most cases, still has a begging bowl out. And it shouldn't be necessary. We shouldn't need it from anyone. Congo is one of the richest countries in the world in terms of agricultural potential and mineral wealth. And yet, why is this happening? Because Africa's not free. This is a shackled continent. We've got corrupt criminals as leaders who are looting from the public treasury, with a few good exceptions. But mostly, you've got criminals like Mugabe stuffing their face while they starve their people. Calvin Coolidge, one of the few Christians they ever had in the White House, says, a government which lays taxes on the people not required by urgent public necessity and sound public policy is not a protector of liberty, but an instrument of tyranny. It condemns a citizen to servitude, to effectively a slave, working a good portion of a year just to fund corrupt criminals in government. Corruption creates poverty. Zuma once said that corruption hurts nobody. False. Corruption hurts everybody. It increases the price tag for everybody. It steals from everyone. Some have actually tried to say that corruption doesn't hurt anyone, but actually corruption steals from absolutely everyone. It chases away tourists, it chases away investors, it chases away job creators, it devalues the currency. It reduces the value of everyone's savings, earnings, and pensions. It erodes and implodes any economy. Corruption, more than any other single cause, is responsible for most of the poverty and corruption in society. Why is it that in 1956, when Ghana, which is, used to be known as the Gold Coast, got its independence, they had a standard of living 4 times higher than South Korea, 1956. Today, South Korea has got a standard of living something in the region of 6,400% more than Ghana. What's changed? South Korea was also a colony. Ghana was a colony. At one time, Ghana had a high standard of living per capita, and yet it's now just out of the stratosphere in proportion and comparison. Now, many people may say there's little that they can do about all this. Well, actually, there's much that each one of us can do. First of all, we need to rediscover the Christian work ethic and biblical principles for Africa. We should be studying what the Bible teaches on economics, on free enterprise, on honest money, and biblical solutions to crime. You may be surprised to know that there's over 700 references to money in the Bible, and Jesus spoke more about money than any other subject as parables. 2/3 of them deal with money. We need to rediscover the biblical commands to a nation, the political principles and the teachings of Christ, the biblical solutions to crime, all of which are in Biblical Principles of Africa book, how we can be salt and light, applying the Lordship of Christ to every area of life. Now, education is foundational. It's the most important. The philosophy of education in this generation will become the philosophy of government in the next generation. Secondly, we can all do something to reclaim and restore our communities. Maybe you can't change the world or the continent or the country, but you can change your community. The biblical principle that each community has the God-given right and responsibility to elect its own leaders from amongst its own people was established during the evangelization of Europe back in 14 centuries ago. It has been recognized in the common law of England, 9th century, the Domes of King Alfred. And by the way, the Domes of King Alfred, or the common law of England, begins with, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of house of bondage, out of house of slavery in Egypt, you shall have no other gods before me. And the whole of Exodus 20 and Exodus 21 and 22, the case laws of the Ten Commandments, and then the Sermon on the Mount and key teachings of Jesus are the foundation of the common law of England. That's the foundation. Magna Carta, the Great Charter of 1215, which was written by a pastor, Stephen Langton, saturated with scripture and scriptural concepts, and the English Bill of Rights of 1689, and other foundational statutes. No taxation is lawful unless it has been approved by representatives of the class and community who are being taxed. You can't have the ruling classes deciding what the working classes have to pay. You can't have the working class deciding what the ruling class is going to pay, and so on and so forth. You can't have one community deciding what another community is going to pay. It must be municipal based. The right of every community to govern themselves and to determine who is to be entrusted with the stewardship of their resources has been foundational for over a millennium of Christian civilization. You see the distress we're in. Just look at Jammy Steps and UCT. This is 2015. This kind of nonsense carries on all over the place. Those of us who are old enough remember a time when our communities were clean, neat, safe, and attractive. When I was growing up, we had no knowledge of or need for high walls, barbed wire, razor wire fences, electric fencing. Why would you have electric fencing? Security gates? What's a security gate? Burglar bars? Never knew that when I was growing up. Motion sensors? What on earth would that be? Steering locks? Why would you lock the steering? Armed response companies? Huh? Why would you need that? I mean, every home was armed when I was growing up anyway. So there was no, you know, armed response is dad. The whole concept that people have grown up with and that even children in preschool know the names of. We didn't even know that as adults when I was growing up. Indeed, none of these concepts was known amongst us. There was no need. I never got locked out of home. Door was never locked. If the front door was locked, which might have happened on occasion, you just went to the back door. And if the back door was locked, which it never was, I could have climbed through the window because there's no burglar bars and the window's always open. So getting locked out of home, which has been a reality for my children, never happened to me growing up. I never needed to worry about being locked out of home. It's just absolutely bizarre. You look at these pictures of history of what parks used to be like. This is, by the way, Salisbury, what today is Harare. It doesn't look like that now. This is the road I walked up to school at Milton High every day in Bulawayo. Sadly, it doesn't look like that now. Jacaranda trees. Remember, walking in the shade so much time and popping these purple bulbs during the autumn, and literally streets carpeted with these beautiful purple petals. I do not think my parents drove me to school more than a couple of times in my whole life. It was safe to catch a bus or the train or walk or cycle across town, even in junior school. I remember at age 6 going to school. My mom took me the first time by bus and thereafter caught the bus on my own to school. There's no need to be escorted by my parents or drove. In fact, I don't know, except a few Jewish kids, anybody got driven by their parents to school. And you'd look at these, what's the matter with them that their parents need to drive them to school? Huh? Now, today, you're a derelict parent if you don't drive your kid to school. And people would be thought irresponsible to allow their children the kind of freedom that we had growing up. When I was just 12 years old, I remember walking to Kami Ruins, which, checking, was 14 miles or 20 kilometers outside of Bulawayo on a Saturday alone. 12 years old, got my water bottle, hat, knife, decided to go off on a... My parents didn't know I was doing that, and I saw wild animals all the way along. I could see, not in a game reserve, just outside the city limits, everything from giraffe and wildebeest and rhinos. And it was normal. That was normal. And that was during a war in Rhodesia. I was safer in a war in Rhodesia than you are now in Cape Town, in peace. That wasn't in a game park. It's just absolutely extraordinary. All that I had to do was be home before the sunset. And then you can go to these meetings where I remember... one of these events where Daniela's choir was singing and F.W. de Klerk stood up and said, who the born frees? Well, I immediately raised my hand because I was born free. But people are actually looking. Oh, take care. I was born before burglar bars and security gates and free to wonder how on earth are the poor kids brought up behind burglar bars and security gates the born frees? And those of us who are born really free, we're not born free. I mean, talk about the inversion of language and meaning. Our children today know very little about freedom. Today, children are targeted by drug dealers, rapists, and pedophiles. And they sometimes are working for the state and might even be the school teacher and the principal. Children are in danger of being mugged on the way to school and in danger of being sold drugs at school. To a large extent, the reason for this drastic deterioration in our local communities has come from the secular humanist worldview, the news media, the entertainment industry, or the blasphemy industry of Hollywood, which has been undermining Christian foundations and promoting situation ethics, glorifying violence, and glamorizing crime. It has also, to a large extent, been the inevitable result of the amalgamation of municipalities and the centralization of power in unicities. Of all the bad, evil things done by the ANC, I think the unicities the worst. You may think that's a bit extreme. Actually, because it hits at the local community. Instead of local control of our own municipalities with our own local police force to protect the interests and property of each municipality, we now have professional politicians who neither know nor care about our communities. Anyone know the name of this individual? Blade Nzimani. And what was his position? He was the Minister of Higher Education. In other words, universities. You'll never guess, he's also General Secretary of the Southern Communist Party, but maybe his T-shirt, hat, and the banner behind him could have given that away. General Secretary of the Southern Communist Party was also Minister of Higher Education. Do you see any kind of correlation effects of what's going on in our universities here? When you've got a communist running the universities, are you surprised at the results? Rates and taxes have skyrocketed, while services have plummeted. We pay more in rates and taxes now than we used to pay rent for our house. We pay more for water. It's just beyond comprehension. If I tell you that my first suit I bought, full suit for 17 Rand, the tie, the belt, everything came to under 20 Rand. And that's my first salary coming out of my first mission to Europe, 1988. 1,000 Rand covered my airfares from South Africa to Germany to Britain to America and back, and my train and other expenses going around Europe on a 2.5 month mission. Multiple countries, 1,000 Rand covered a 2.5 month mission across 3 continents. Now, that's 1988. That's not a long time ago. You have all been stolen from. We've all been stolen from by corrupt criminal bankster population and criminal government class. The streets are now often strewn with rubbish, litter, and graffiti. The countryside's been polluted and filled with plastic bags and broken glass. Litterbugs, loiterers, beggars, opportunistic thieves, gangsters prowl the streets, breaking into vehicles and into homes, turning what used to be close-knit communities into areas resembling a war zone. With zoo-like bars over windows and high electric and razor wire fences surrounding what used to be friendly neighborhoods. Our neighborhoods, many of which didn't have very big barriers between them, and it was often just small fences to keep the poodle in and that the hedgehog didn't get out and so on. And now it looks like, is this a zoo? In addition to these riots and irresponsible threats of white genocide, kill the Boer, kill the farmer songs, all of this has only driven down the value of the national currency of the rand, further impoverishing the entire population, stealing from everyone, chasing away the job creators and investors and tourists, and leaving multiplied millions unemployed. So what's our response? Nehemiah 4:14 says, "Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses." So what is needed if we're to reclaim and restore our communities? Number one, for God's honor and glory and as faithful servants of resources to serve our neighbors and God's creatures, only ratepayers should be allowed to vote in municipal elections. They're the ones whose money is being used. They're the ones who should decide how it is used. Only long-term residents who've excelled in serving the community should be eligible to stand as candidates for any municipality. In order not to attract professional politicians and those with a looting mentality, no salaries beyond basic expenses should be provided for town councillors and mayors. You would be shocked to hear what a town councillor gets paid. It's obscene. It's incredible. And yet they used to donate their time, and now it's a get-rich-quick scheme. There should be no opportunity for civil servants to loot the resources so painstakingly built up for generations by residents and ratepayers. You think how Mugabe is one of the richest people in the world of one of the poorest countries in the world. Decentralization is absolutely essential. Every local community should have direct control over their own municipalities. Every local municipality should be enabled to maintain their own local police force to protect the interests and property of each community. The police should be directly owned, controlled, trained, accountable to, paid for by the local municipality. It should be the municipality's police. Why should you have a bunch of corrupt politicians 1,000-something kilometres away deciding what goes on in your community? That's why they stand by while your shops get looted and your buildings get burned down, because what's it to them? They don't care. No litter or pollution is to be tolerated. In order to eradicate the crime, the first priority should be to eradicate the grime that so often encourages it. Now, this is just in Khayelitsha, some very good quality. Look at the quality of the food. Fruit, hamburgers, juices, bottled waters, just strewn on the ground. Waste. People get things for free, they don't appreciate and value them. This is just beyond disgusting. How much wastage. No littering, panhandling, beggars and opportunistic thieves are to be tolerated in any community. Because the people who get things for free, like in the best universities around, they don't think anything about burning the libraries and the original oil on canvas artwork of that university, because they've got an entitlement mentality. More than two-thirds of all the railway carriages and engines in the Western Cape have been burned in the last 3 years. More than two-thirds. I think it's three-quarters, actually. Charitable work is to be supported in every opportunity given to the less fortunate through ministries like the Salvation Army and the Ark. There's nothing better than ministry-based charity going from congregation to congregation, from family to family, personal, because there's accountability. The family is the first level of charity, and then the congregation, and then you have ministries and missions, but it should never be the state. When a state gets hold of it, most of it disappears. Do they have sticky fingers? They have got a Bermuda Triangle to make billions disappear into with nothing to show for it. Parks for children must be carefully maintained and kept clean, safe, and protected from broken glass, drunkards, drug dealers, and paedophiles. Municipalities must become drug-free, crime-free, with zero tolerance for crime. Municipalities should have set a high priority on restoring the gardens, the verges, the traffic islands, and beautify the inner cities, reforest the suburbs, and set up lights in public areas to discourage crime. Does anyone recognize where this particular fountain and park is? Most of the pictures I've been showing have actually been of Rhodesia, and this is Bulawayo Centenary Park. And we used to have kudu and impala wandering around the park, and I remember going as a young boy frequently to the park and having the fun of feeding these hulking great big kudu. And it wasn't very intelligent, but I remember giving these little pink sweets to the kudu, and he'd crunch, 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 these little pink sweets. And I'd give him the big sweets, these sort of lozenge types, and you just swallow it in one gulp. I'd give it again, crunch, 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 and little pink sweets. Swallow. Obviously, you shouldn't feed buck that, but that's the sort of thing as a young kid I'd do. There you had these buck wandering around in the Centenary Park. Municipal taxes may only be used for the local community. The Unicity plundering of rates and taxes, ostensibly to serve less privileged communities, have proved to only be a cover for massive corruption on a colossal scale, like Judas, who complained when the woman poured the ointment on Jesus' feet, and he said, why was this ointment not sold and the money given to the poor? And John's Gospel adds, Judas didn't care about the poor. Judas was in charge of the money bags, and Judas was a thief. I mean, and that's the way it's been ever since. You've got the same attitude. The people who talk about the poor loot the poor. And I know this because I was actually at Parliament, sitting in front of Cyril Rampos and the other Constitutional Assembly people on the Health Committee, about 50 of these parliamentarians there, and they were talking about the need to legalize abortion to get rid of the unwanted street children. And I felt the blood rising, and I got a bit angry, and I regretted what I said as soon as I said it. I said, I know you all talk about the poor, but what have any of you actually personally ever done for the poor with your own money? And as I said it, I thought, you've overstepped the mark. There's 50 people here. All you need is one person to have, and you've kind of destroyed your argument. I didn't put this very well. And as I said it, and my heart was beating fast, I looked around, and everyone is looking down, staring at the ceiling, doodling, look at their feet, scratching the back of their heads. Not one of 50 members of Parliament could look me in the eye. These are the people talking about the unwanted street children and the poor. Not one of them could say, I've done anything, personally. And that's the way they are. These corrupt criminals will gladly give your money to someone else, but they'll never give their own. And so they steal from the hospitals, so that patients are literally lying on the floor with drips. When each local municipality administers their own taxes for their own areas, it'll bring down the burden on everyone and make available far more for charitable, person-to-person, congregation-to-congregation, community-to-community, responsible giving that'll go along with restoration and upliftment. This, by the way, is where I lived. Bulawayo Club over here. My father managed that. That was the High Court in Bulawayo. And this is what Cecil Park looked like in Salisbury. That's what soldiers used to look like. The best way to restore pride, responsibility, and ownership of residents and ratepayers is to give them back control over their own municipalities. I had on Mitchell's Plain a meeting where the residents were saying, why can't we have one policeman in our police station who is from our area? We don't have a single colored, we don't have a single person who speaks Afrikaans. Why can't we have a policeman who speaks our language in our own community? Why do they all come from the Eastern Cape? What is the matter with us? And so you can imagine why the people in Mitchell's Plain are fed up. They've been targeted by drug dealers and criminals. Their children are being murdered. And the police don't care. The police don't come from the municipality. They've got no accountability to the municipality. And so the community is suffering. We need to support political parties and municipal candidates who will work for self-determination and self-government with self-supporting, self-regulating, self-protecting municipalities. Families are the basic building block of every society. It is of the highest priority to protect the family by protecting children from all threats and all bad influences. This includes ensuring that loiterers, who often are drug dealers or pedophiles, are kept away from any community, and particularly near schools and areas where children walk to and from their schools and sports and to scouts and guides and youth groups. Local authorities should ensure that there's no liquor stores or sexually orientated businesses anywhere near schools or where children travel past. We've had too many cases of children falling victim to those kind of characters. By re-establishing local municipal police forces, which are entirely drawn from the community concerned, who know the people and who are known by the people, we can work to eradicate threats to communities. When a policeman, like you have in America, where they vote in their local sheriff, actually, they vote for their local sheriff. And so the local police know the community and know, they know who doesn't belong. They know who's from outside. They understand whether this person's a threat or not. And that's the kind of police you want. But where the policeman's a stranger, and where the community is a stranger to the policeman, that doesn't work well. Do not remove the ancient landmark, nor enter the fields of the fatherless. Biblical principle, Proverbs 23:10. Community cleanup drives are needed to ensure that all are committed to fighting litter, pollution, and crime. It's important to involve all the residents and clubs and societies and community. Pines, we've got a lovely practice of mobilizing for planting more trees along the canal and cleaning up the canal and so on. Churches, youth groups, women's groups, men's groups, Cubs, Scouts, Brownies, Rotary Club, guides, businesses, schools can all set the standard by planting trees, bushes, and flowers, and painting over graffiti, and providing water bowls and fountains in public place for birds and for pets, and restoring the play parks and gyms, jungle gyms, skate ramps for the youth. We used to have a lovely skate ramp in Pinelands, which our boys all enjoyed, until it was turned into a drug-dealing mess and broken bottles. There's so much broken bottles run in. You could see that drug dealers and drug addicts were using this until the whole thing just fell apart, broke apart, and then was dismantled, and leaving just a sea of broken glass and needles all over the place. This used to be a skate ramp that everyone in the community could enjoy. But that's what goes on, and we pay a fortune in rates and taxes, and the municipality does nothing in return. Undertaking neighborhood watch patrols, being good neighbors to those in need, that's what builds a community. Isaiah 58, verse 12, those from among you shall build the old waste places. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations. You shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to dwell in. The damage to monuments and museums and the environment throughout this country testifies to the cancer. Now, notice the middle letters of cancer is A and C. A cancer is a cell that doesn't help the body, but kills the body. It breaks down the health of the body. And that's what cancer stands for. crime, arson, nepotism, corruption, exploitation, and riotous behavior, which has been tolerated for far too long. It's time to stop the looting and the polluting of our communities. Let us restore to ratepayers and homeowners the control of the municipalities that administer their communities for the benefit of all, including visitors and transients and tourists and others, for the health of the economy, for our children, for our grandchildren, for our grandchildren's children. By the way, this map shows you where Afrikaans is the home language, where it's the majority of the home language. And you can see that the west of South Africa, or the Cape, is particularly Afrikaans, is the majority home language. You'd never know that by the way government operates. And yet Afrikaans not only was here long before English, but it still is the majority language in the Western Cape. Why should the people of the Western Cape not be able to determine what is their national language? Why can we not have English and Afrikaans as national languages of the Western Cape? Why must Afrikaans be hounded out of existence, even in Stellenbosch University, discriminated against? This is ridiculous. But the hostility of central government to the majority language or the majority of the citizens of the Western Cape is unacceptable. It's disturbing that more than half of the eligible voters do not bother to vote in either national or municipal elections. Do you know that literally, there's a whole lot of people say, I don't vote or I haven't registered to vote because what difference is it going to make? Do you know that more people are eligible to vote who haven't registered to vote or don't vote than those who do vote? And those people who don't vote, who outnumber the ones who do, say, what difference could it make? Well, think what a difference they could make if they actually registered to vote and voted their values. It's incredible to think that people don't know what difference. And do you know how many major elections have been won by just a few votes and sometimes a single vote? You shall appoint judges and officers in your gates, which the Lord your God gives you, according to your tribes, and they shall judge the people with just judgment. You shall not pervert justice. You shall not show partiality, nor take a bribe. For a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and twists the words of the righteous. Deuteronomy 16, well worth a look. How appropriate that is. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. By the way, that's the oldest Presbyterian church in South Africa. Now, for further documentation and other relevant resources in municipal national elections, we have an savotersguide.org website and also links on christianaction.org.za. The Biblical Principles of Africa book also is very helpful, and it's available in Afrikaans. It's available in French as well. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin.